Good afternoon. I'm John Alverdi from the University of Chicago and the moderator of this session. Suzanne Nicholson will be also co-moderating with me. I'll introduce everybody. And I want to just introduce the topic with three short slides to talk to you about what is microbiome, what is the microbiome medicine. And it's nothing as complicated as the name might sound. It's just an unaccounted for dimension in human biology that we've now applied to patient wellness and disease management. It's important to recognize that your entire microbiome, all the bacteria in your body, all the genes that they have, all the proteins and metabolites that they may produce, are as a giant consortia. It's not a single microbe. And everything that goes in your mouth or your patient's mouth is metabolized by your their microbiota, and thousands, tens of thousands of metabolites are produced, most of which we don't know. Those metabolites have a lot to do with programming the immune system and the metabolism of the patient. And as shocking as it may sound, those metabolites get secreted, taken up by the epithelium, by the mucosa, and then they do funny things like cause HDACs or histone deacylation enzymes, those moieties that change not gene structure, but gene regulation. And so you can actually change the way a gene is transcribed by some type of metabolite that interacts with histone acylation or methylation events on genes. And that's going to affect all these downstream signals. So I like to think of this as n dimensions of interactions between the microbiome and host physiology. So it's important that you, as you hear the talks, that you get this idea about community structure and membership. Remember now, it's not enough to just know what bugs are there. You need to know how they relate to one another, what kind of structure they're in, and who's there. But that's not enough. You need to know what genes those bacteria have in them and what proteins they're expressing. So you can do proteomics and what metabolites they're expressing in that giant community. So we talk about the metaproteome across all bacterial species, the metagenome, the metatranscriptome. And then if you want to know if that particular consortia is producing the human phenotype that you see, you need to keep the whole thing together. Remember, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. You can't make cheese in a test tube just by doing mass spec on the cheese and knowing all the components and then re-adding them together. It won't work. So now what you have to do is take germ-free mice and you have to take samples from patients and put them into the germ-free mice to say, ooh, this patient had X phenotype, a leak or a ileus or a tumor. I'm take the whole consortium, put it back in that mouse and prove that that is the case. And so the most striking example of that is this. This was in Proceedings of the National Academy of Science just recently. And here's a problem, multiple sclerosis, that nobody understands. Immunologists have been studying this for decades. IL-6, this, that, and the other, this immune marker, this biomarker, this brain biopsy, this thing, this protein. And all they did is take monozygotic twins, discordant for multiple sclerosis. One had it, the other didn't. Took their fecal sample, put it into the germ-free mouse, and the patient with multiple sclerosis gave that germ-free mouse MS-like symptoms. Whereas the patient without multiple sclerosis, the identical twin, nothing happened to the mouse. How is that? We say, well, there must be something in the CSF, you know, biopsy this, do that. It's seeping through multiple dimensions. So what I want you to keep in mind as you hear these excellent talks that we've prepared for you, that this is what you think of when you think of infection, but I want you to think of it this way, as a perturbation in host function that occurs as a result of a complex interconnectivity between all these different species communicating to one another and how they seep through the host and change host physiology. So with that, I'm going to introduce the first speaker, who is Susanna Nicholson, who is a assistant professor of surgery at the University of Texas, and she's going to talk to us about trauma, critical care, and injury to the intestinal microbiome. She's one of the few investigators that has actually studied the changes in the microbiome that occur suddenly after a major trauma. Dr. Nicholson.
Thanks, Dr. Alverdi, and thanks. I appreciate the pleasure of the podium today. I'm going to talk some about some of the work I've been doing involving trauma, but also we're going to touch on critical illness and the gut microbiome. I have no conflicts of interest to declare. So the microbiome is an ecological community of commensal, symbiotic, and pathogenic microorganisms that share our body space. The composition differs according to body location and can change with age. We actually have more microbial cells living in and on our bodies than we have human cells. And as Dr. Alverdi was mentioning, this makes up an important part of our phenotype. So the gut microbiome provides a number of vital functions and has been implicated in a number of disease processes such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease. But in terms of injury, there's still pretty limited information or clinical studies out there regarding the gut microbiome. So if we think about ourselves as a superorganism, where we're living in relationship with our microbes, and there's a constant interplay and communication between signaling between those cells, and then there's also interaction with the environment. And then this, in turn, affects the balance between our state of health and our state of disease. So it's easy to see how in critical illness, then this is going to potentially influence physiology and also in the setting of trauma. When we traditionally think about death in trauma, most deaths occur within the first hour, and really there's not much that we can do about these about mortality at this point in time. But there are patients that go on to survive their initial injury and sort of languish in the hospital. And there's a late peak in mortality that occurs about at 3 to 4 weeks. And this is usually related to sepsis or multiple organ failure. And so when I initially started thinking about how injury could potentially influence the gut microbiome, this was sort of what I was really thinking about. And so when we, it's going backwards. Okay, yes. So when we think about death related to sepsis, often late onset sepsis is the most common cause of death in modern ICUs. And Dr. Alverdi and his group have looked at this a lot. And the current dogma is that microbial burden characterized by the isolation of a pathogen cultured from a site that is normally considered sterile. And if organ failure resolves and that pathogen is cleared from that site, then we blame that pathogen for the cause of the sepsis. If the organ failure doesn't resolve and we can't culture an organism, we blame inflammation. But really, there's no clear evidence for either. This is also a diagram that Dr. Alberti's group published, but when you have injury and you have activation of the immune system and you have a SIRS-like response, a patient's or a person's microbiome that's intact governs that immune homeostasis following that injury. And as you have a shift in that composition of that community, it can shift to a pathobiome. And then this is what you see in late onset sepsis. And then on top of that, when you have multiple takebacks to the operating room, prolonged exposure to antibiotics, other hypoxic hits, and artificial inadequate gut nutrients, this further influences the composition of that community. So, it's time to redefine the way we think. Microbial burden is the net output of interactions between the body's entire biomass of microbes and the host immune response. And so this involves the number of microbes, the community structure, the virulence associated with those microbes. And so then if we think about sepsis in terms of a systems biology, we can reapproach the way that we think about sepsis without isolating a pathogen, without having bacteremia, and without a clear understanding of mechanism. So this was a study that Dr. Alverdi's group published in 14 ICU patients with varying lengths of ICU stay. And they found that community structure of the gut microbiome dramatically changed with near complete ecologic collapse during prolonged critical illness. And so you have this emergence of ultra-low diversity communities. And the commensal behavior of the microbiome shifted to a more pathogenic behavior, and especially in the setting of physiologic stress with things such as opioids. And so, again, this was termed the pathobiome. Another study by another group, this was in 114 ICU patients of different causes of stay, and and this was over four sites, and they found that critical illness led to significant and rapid dysbiosis. And dysbiosis is when you have this imbalance of microbes that occurs, where you have loss of health-promoting organisms and overgrowth of pathogenic bacteria. And so they found depleted health-promoting bacteria and overgrowth of pathogens, and that this disruption was greater at a later time point in the ICU stay. Another study by a group from Japan, they found that altered gut flora are associated with septic complications and mortality in critically ill patients with SIRS. So again, going back to trauma is the leading cause of mortality in people under the age of 40. And as a trauma surgeon, I was interested to see if injury itself was influencing the gut microbiome. So if we think about the gut as an immune organ, especially in relationship to the external, with its relationship to the external environment, there are a handful of ways that trauma can impact the gut, whether this is through bidirectional neuropathways, through the brain-gut access, through intestinal injury, or direct intestinal injury, or through a systemic response. And all of this then in turn can affect the gut microbiome and cause that imbalance or the dysbiosis and that shift to a pathobiome, and can then influence clinical outcome. And going back to Dr. Alverdi's work, when you have those multiple trips to the operating room, prolonged exposure to antibiotics, other hypoxic hits, and then things like parenteral nutrition and inadequate sources of nutrition, this is further influencing that imbalance. So there have been a handful of preclinical studies that have looked at injury and various injury models that have looked at the role of injury in the gut, in alterations in the gut microbiome. So there have been several papers in burn injury, several in traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, and then we recently performed a preclinical study in an animal model of polytrauma hemorrhage where we found that there were changes in the gut microbiome as early as 2 hours in the absence of therapeutic intervention. There have been several small clinical studies that have looked at this, mainly in small numbers and small patient populations, so the data is still pretty inconclusive. We performed a prospective observational pilot study where we enrolled 72 patients, adult patients, that were severely injured with an injury severity score greater than 15. And we also enrolled 13 healthy volunteers. We took fecal specimens on admission to the emergency department, and then again at 3, 7, 10, and 13 days following injury. We then performed gut microbiome analysis and taxonomic classification using the Trimgene Genes 16S RNA gene database. And then alpha and beta diversity were determined and analyzed with the Crisco-Wallace and Promanova respectively. This is a principal components analysis plot representing beta diversity. And each point on there represents a different patient. And the further apart the two points are, the more dissimilar the beta diversity is. In the red are the injured patients, and in the yellow are the healthy controls. And already on day zero, and this is essentially within 30 minutes of the time of injury, there was a difference in the beta diversity on admission compared to healthy controls. When at 5 days, you start to see clustering closer to the healthy controls. However, this was still significantly different at this time point. When we looked at all of the patients across time, there was a significant difference in the beta diversity at every time point compared to day zero and compared to healthy controls. And this was across all indices for beta diversity. This suggests that the gut microbiome differs from healthy controls as early as 30 minutes from the time of injury and remains different during the hospitalization. Alpha diversity, or the intrapopulation diversity, which is different than the beta diversity, which is the interpopulation diversity, increased on admission, and then there was a subsequent loss of diversity over time in the hospital. In looking at individual phyla, we saw a loss of health-promoting bacteria in the phylum Firmicutes as early as day zero, and this was there was continued loss of relative abundance in this phylum over time, whereas there was a significant increase in the pathogenic bacteria, proteobacteria, and this traditionally is where we see E. coli and things like that. So there was a significant increase already on admission in proteobacteria and over time. When we go back and look at this initial plot from day zero, you see in the yellow that there are some red dots that are also clustered there around those yellow dots. And these patients, indicating that these patients did not have a microbiome that differed. And I was curious as to why some patients would have a microbiome that changed and why some patients would have a microbiome more similar to those healthy controls. And when I started looking, when I broke this down, there was no difference in patients whose microbiome was similar to healthy controls and those who were different in age, in males to females, in the ratio of blunt to penetrating trauma, in ISS, shock index, which is the heart rate over the systolic blood pressure. However, there was a significant difference in the amount of red blood cells or also in total blood products that were transfused within 12 hours. Now, granted, that's 12 hours, but a significant portion of that blood was transfused on admission through a Belmont prior to even those samples being taken. We also saw there was a significant increase in the patients receiving a massive transfusion protocol as well. To confirm this observation, we again looked at the alpha and beta diversity, and there was a significant difference in beta diversity in the patients receiving more blood products, so patients with receiving 11 units or more compared to those receiving smaller amounts of blood product or no product at all. There was a significant difference in the beta diversity as well as the alpha diversity. So patients had a more diverse gut microbiome compared to those receiving less blood. And looking at ISS, there was a significant difference in the beta diversity when broken out by ISS. However, there was no difference in the alpha diversity. This suggests that the gut microbiome differs in patients receiving high levels of blood product, total RBCs, and patients with a higher ISS, and that species diversity is also increased in these patients. This also indicates potentially that early transfusion may help preserve the gut microbiome. So to summarize, gut microbial diversity is altered within 30 minutes following trauma with increased pathogenic and decreased beneficial bacteria, and potentially early transfusion may preserve the gut microbiome. So to conclude, surgery and trauma that equal a stress to our body and our microbiota. Everything we do to patients or give to patients has the potential to greatly impact physiology at a macro and micro level at an early time point. And characterization of a patient's gut microbiome may help direct that patient's care. It may help us guide resuscitation and predict clinical outcomes. Also, preserving or restoring the microbiome is a potential therapeutic strategy. So ultimately, more preclinical and clinical studies are needed to better understand the microbiome in the context of injury and critical illness. I'd like to thank all of those who've helped me with this study. And thank you, and I guess we'll take questions at the end.